last presentation for the conference is dealing with some of the issues that have already been discussed yesterday and today, dealing with public and confidential records. And from the Orange County Council's office, I have Chris Miller, Senior Deputy County Counsel. Chris Miller's been with Orange County Council's office for 15 years. He's been practicing law since 1975. Since joining the county, he's had a variety of assignments ranging from juvenile court trial work, advisory, and litigation representation. Prior to joining the county, Mr. Miller was in his own practice. I'd like to welcome Mr. Chris Miller.
I also do my own heavy lifting, so that's why I'm running around here. If there's any need for extra copies, there's a couple more. Oh, sorry, I missed you. There's two.
Get two. Yeah.
There's a couple more if you want.
I have them.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning. I represent the healthcare agency in Orange County, so I'm normally talking to them about the type of records that they may have to provide. A lot of the concepts are pretty much similar to the issues that you're going to be facing when you're required to respond to a Public Records Act. So, and of course, I see you've already talked about the AG opinion, and you probably know all the legal ramifications of that, so I'll just skip that for my presentation today. We'll just move on to other things. I'm kidding. We'll talk a little bit about that because there are overtones of privacy with respect to the material that a lot of you house, and there's also decisions that you have to make about whether you will or will not provide records consistent with a Public Records Act request. So what I want to do is, as we start, say one other thing to you, which is I'm going to give you a general overview of how it works and how our office advises our clients in the County of Orange. But remember that, you know, you are represented by different counsel, represented by, in most cases, I would presume, county counsel. And therefore, you really do want to rely on their legal advice to you when you have a question. So remember, a lot of the things I'm going to be talking to you are kind of global in approach. They're the way we do things. There's nothing wrong with the way we do things, but however, I'm aware that from county to county, there are differences in the way legal counsel do advise their clients. So my way is not necessarily the best way, but it's the way we do it pretty much here in the county. So basically the overview here is that the law is found in the California Government Code, and it's the version of the Federal Freedom of Information Act, which basically provides for the release and disclosure of records on the federal level. The purpose of the statute is to permit sunshine in government, that is to permit the public access to records to see how government works. And that's the underlying principle. The legislature has said we don't necessarily want to keep the workings of government secret. The way in which we will allow the public or the citizenry to find out how we do things is to make requests for records. And in most cases those records are disclosable, and in some cases they're not. I indicate here that the statute's been around for some time. It was pretty much signed out by the governor in 1968. It's been modified numerous times. And the reason is because different situations come up, case law comes up, different examples of disclosure come up which may or may not have been covered under the original statute. Additional exemptions from disclosure have also been created by the legislature and added to the act. So consequently, there's been a lot of change in the 30 years or so that the Public Records Act has been in effect. And in November of 2004, the reason I added this is to kind of indicate that there's continuing public interest in disclosure, and also, though, in privacy with respect to the rights of California citizens. So the state constitution was amended last year And it declared the state policy saying that the people have a right of access to information concerning the conduct of the people's business. And therefore, the writings of public officials and agencies shall be open to public scrutiny. The fact that the Constitution was amended to make this kind of a statement does indicate to us that there is a heightened sense of expectation that the government's business will be made available and open to the public. Thank you. Now, what really goes on is the basic mandate is that the state and local government agencies must permit members of the public to inspect or receive copies. Now, I want to emphasize the word inspect or receive because when a request is made, a member of the public can come to your office and say, I want to see that document, or I want to see a copy of that document. They don't have to pay for it, nor do they have to request a copy of it. And these are the documents that the agencies use, create, or keep to conduct government business. So any member of the public may inspect or obtain a copy, and they don't have to give you a reason. They don't have to say it's because it's for my eighth grade homework assignment, or because I'm investigating you, or because I don't like you, or I do like you. They merely need to come in and say, I would like to see a copy of the document or see the document, and they don't have to assign a reason for it. The statute that we're going to talk about a little bit here sets out strict timelines and procedures for your response. And access to the record must be given unless it's exempt from public disclosure. And that's a decision that you're going to be involved in making.
Next, please.
Okay. Now, exemptions. Some exemptions are mandatory and some are discretionary. So you have to determine, first of all, when you're looking at a situation whether you will or will not release, whether you're mandated not to release. They're set forth in the statute and in other statutory schemes as well as the California Constitution and sometimes in case law. So a court may have discussed an issue with respect to this or that category of records and has indicated after it reviewed the Public Records Act or a particular provision of it, and in conjunction with the California Constitution, that in fact this document or this class of documents should not be disclosed. Now, the underlying theory of an exemption, as I've indicated here, is that there's been a public policy determination that government functions better with this particular document or a class of documents not being disclosed to public view. And there's also a recognition here inherent in that kind of analysis that there's a right of privacy involved which may reside in certain personnel records, in medical records, or records that are similar in tone or scope. For example, in the healthcare agency, we're constantly being asked to provide various records pursuant to subpoena, the FBI comes in, the Secret Service comes in, we get administrative record requests all the time. We get public record requests all the time. We have to determine whether or not there's an element of an exemption or privacy there which is going to say to us, we can't disclose. And when I say we, I speak for the agency because I work with them intimately all the time. But these are decisions, as we'll discuss, that are really made by the agency itself. But having made the decision, when I say the we, then what we have to do is say, these are the reasons why this particular class of documents or this particular document itself should not be disclosed. Now, the basics of a request are not too difficult to follow, but you do have to comply with statutory timelines and procedures for the response. And that's why we constantly are kind of pressing our client, as soon as you get one of these in, please let us know so that we, your legal counsel, are available to you if we need to assist you. But don't get it into us at the last minute because you may have a raft of legal issues that are connected with this particular request. And if we don't have enough time to assist you, then you are in danger of violating the statute itself. Now, what we normally ask the client to do is to take the first step and say, okay, determine what records are requested. So, and sometimes that's a task. You don't get a very good description, or the requester will make an oral request and not reduce it to writing. Now, when that happens, what I do is I counsel my client and I say, do your best to write down what you understand the request to be. Now, the reason we do that is because we try to nail down the scope of the request, and under the Act now, the agency or the governmental agency that's required, that's asked, is required to help the requester so that you can focus the request so that one, the requester's not disappointed, and number two, that you don't go off doing 1,000 different things and chasing all kinds of records that are not really part of the request that was initially made. So what you have to do then is identify those records as best you can. Now, when you get to the point where you have your records identified as responsive, you have to take appropriate steps not to disclose the two types of material that are exempt. Okay, the first is information the county or agency is forbidden to disclose. Now, that you'll usually find in a statute governing your scope of work. There's various statutes all across the band of the California codes which indicate that this or that type of record is going to be not to be disclosed because of certain prohibitions, certain legislative intentions. A good example for me, and let me continue to relate to the healthcare agency, HIV test records are very, very confidential. On the federal side, drug and alcohol records, which we contain as the healthcare agency, are terribly confidential and can only be accessed in a certain way. There's a new federal regulation and rule called HIPAA, which is the Health Information Portability Act, which also requires that any particular agency that has medical records be very, very particular and understand the way in which they have to disclose these records if they're affected by the federal legislation. So you're going to find statutory or other mandates which are not going to permit you to disclose. You have to be able to identify those, because if you do disclose, you've done two things at least. One, you violated a statute or a regulation, and two, you might have put your agency in danger of a lawsuit. Now, on the federal level, under the HIPAA particular regulations, there's not what we call a private right of action. What happens there is complaints are made to the government or to the local privacy officer. But on the California side, if you violate a statute that says do not disclose or disclose only under certain circumstances or pursuant to this or that particular authorization, and if you don't do it in that way, then now you risk a lawsuit. So you're going to have somebody make a claim against the board or against the county. The time will go. If it's not settled and if it's not otherwise responded to, then the complainant will now have a right to file in the local superior court, and they will claim their damages. The other second category that you have to look at with respect to non-disclosure is information that the agency has the option of disclosing or not, but which the county, as a matter of its own policy, elects not to disclose. And that's where a lot of privacy features might come in, where you say, well, we don't have a statutory prohibition, but we do recognize that there are elements of privacy in, for example, releasing all the addresses in a certain category, which may involve law enforcement officers. Do we want to let the criminals know where our law enforcement officers live? Usually the answer is no. Okay. In the procedure, as we continue to go through this, we identify the form of the request. So unless it's made pursuant to a specific statute or other legal right, we treat it as a Public Records Act request. I'll give you an example of that. There's a lot of various code sections in the Health and Safety Code, which say you can get a copy of this or that particular document, say a death certificate or a birth certificate. So consequently, we try to identify where the request or the legal basis of the request, I should say. If we don't have a specific statute on point, which will maybe perhaps direct us and guide us as how to act when we have to disclose, then we treat it as a Public Records Act request, oral or in writing, doesn't matter, and then we act consistent with the Public Records Act in handling the request and determine whether or not we will or will not disclose. So the request, as I indicated, may be oral or in writing. It's always difficult when it's oral, so try to do your best to get the requester to make it in writing. Why? Well, because both of you will understand the scope of what's being requested. Very important. If the request is unclear, the county employee or staff person must assist the requester. Now, this is a new section in the government code that's been in there a couple years. The whole idea is to assist someone from the outside, okay, who often don't understand or know how to request a record from us. And we have to sit there to say, okay, well, look, let's help you make a focused and effective request that reasonably describes an identifiable record. And often that's what we've had in the past. We don't have an identifiable record, or we have a category of record that may be suggested, but it's over such a long period of time, for example, maybe a 10-year cycle, that it's sometimes very difficult to nail down what the requester wants. And oftentimes, in my case, I will go back to the custodian of records in my agency and say, would you please talk to the requester and ask the requester to make the request more specific or narrowed or assist them? Because otherwise, we're not really going to know how to respond. Okay, next one. Now, once the request is clarified, then the response to the request should specify the scope given. And that way, again, we know exactly the discernible or discrete group of records that the requester wants and that we have to go to and look and examine to see whether or not we have records responsive to that request. Okay, so what we do, well, I say to the client, please identify all of your responsive records, even those that you may feel are exempt from disclosure. So we have to narrow the universe of records to those that we know are responsive to this request. Once we do that, we usually ask the client to make a copy of all records. Why do we do that? Well, the client is the custodian of the records, and those are official records. We don't want those records tampered with. We don't want them destroyed. We don't want them marked in any way. So oftentimes what we'll do is make a set, we'll make a copy, and usually we'll make two sets, and I'll explain that in a minute. Now, do you want to keep the documents confidential? Do you care about disclosure? Those are questions I ask the client. I don't really care what you do. If I know that there's not a mandate in a statute that says you can't let them out the door, then my job is really sort of done at that point. I will advise the client if they have questions. I will, you know, the client says to me, well, what do you think? My response is, I don't really want to analyze whether or not you, the client, want to determine to release or not. I can tell you some of the legal principles involved. For example, there may be issues of privacy. We may have discussed before that there's a reason why we don't want to let a medical record out the door. But usually it's the client decision. And if the answer is no, then there's no prohibition otherwise, then go ahead and disclose. The client can say, fine, I'm more than happy to let these records go out the door. So my response is fine, get them together, do what you have to do, have them ready for the requester. Now, if you are required under a statute to keep certain information confidential, then what you're going to do is delete the material or redact it. And quickly, just let me comment by saying that sometimes we have categorical exemptions, as I said before, where there'll be a whole grouping of data that's not going to be disclosed. Or we may have on various pages of documents that we have certain elements that we know we can't or won't disclose for privacy considerations. And as a consequence, we'll redact or we'll cross those out with black pen or marks a lot or something so that we don't reveal that information to the requester when we turn over the copy of documents, which we feel is responsive to the request. Now, if we choose to keep confidential certain information, then, as I indicated, we delete or redact the material. Now, you can consult your legal counsel as needed if you have a suspicion or a sense that maybe something here may be confidential, and we will usually try to assist our client. But our client's pretty savvy, and they usually know what they don't want to let go out the door. Oftentimes what happens, we simply have to discuss the legal ramifications because we're going to have to supply a reasoning to the requester to not let this stuff go out the door. And then the other thing that I always insist on is be sure someone in your agency or department or group with required expertise reviews those records to determine if all or parts of them are exempt. I can't do that. I don't know your records. Okay, I'm your legal guy. I'm not your substance guy. So you have to look at your stuff. You've got to examine them. Is it time-consuming? Yes. Is it boring? Yes. Is it awful? Yes. It's all those things, okay? But somebody has to do it, and I'm not going to take responsibility for the reason that I don't have the knowledge base to be able to go through your documents and say, these are some that shouldn't go out the door. Now, I can help you when questions come up, but I'm not going to do that initial cut. Okay. Now, we talked about the exemptions very quickly. The first set is categorical. And they require or permit the county or agency to deny access to an entire record of categories. And I just had one of these come up the other day where we had sheriff's criminal investigative file. We had a DA investigative file. Our particular environmental health group is housed in our healthcare agency. They were involved in an environmental investigation with the DA with regard to people that were not processing their chemical waste properly after some kind of a silver plating operation. They were basically letting it go down the sewer, if you can believe that or not. And what happened there was we got, and now it's exploded. There's a case going on, there's a prosecution, and the defense is a big corporation, and now they've subpoenaed us and they want every bit of information we have. Even though, what I should say this, they haven't subpoenaed us yet, they've subpoenaed other entities, they have given us a Public Records Act request. Now, they can do that even though they're in the middle of litigation. But what we can do is say, there's an exemption which requires us not to give this to you because otherwise you'll learn the district attorney's case. You'll learn the case that's being prosecuted against you, and the statute clearly indicates that that information does not have to be provided because, after all, that would just destroy, in most cases, the DA's case, and you might be able to beat the rap when you really shouldn't. Perhaps there's an investigative reason here that ultimately is going to require some kind of a penalty assessment or criminal assessment so that you will do the right thing in the future. So we can refuse to give up those kind of records. Now, the second category are non-categorical exemptions, and those are the ones where you have to make a discretionary call. You have to decide to only delete specified exempt material. Now, that's all. You can't delete the whole mess. You've only got to be able to go in and assign certain information that you understand it shouldn't be disclosed for a legal reason, and I'll talk to you about that in a minute. Now, the time for a response is that you've got to respond promptly and no later than 10 calendar days after the receipt of the request. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to give it up in 10 days. It just means you've got to, under the statute, get back to the person and say, hi, we're still looking at our records. We don't know. You've asked a lot of things. We're trying to gather all of this data from the various places where it is housed in our county. So we're telling you that we're being diligent working on it, and we're going to ask for another 14 days in order to get our act together and see what we have here. Because remember, we have to find out the universe of records that we possess that's responsive to your request itself. So, and there's where our exception comes in. We can extend for an additional 14 days. Normally that happens by virtue of the client signing a letter going out the door. I usually review it so that we can be sure that we have the correct legal reasoning there. And the statute does provide for that exception so that we can properly get our act together, as it were, and find out where our records are and what are responsive. And these are some of the reasons. If the records are voluminous, if we've got to search for stuff in various locations, we may have to consult with other parties that we're working on a project and they have records and they're contracting with the county and all of a sudden, you know, maybe that some of that stuff is disclosable. So we do have some leeway here. And also, we've got programming requests, which I'll talk about in a minute. We can also go ahead and take the extra 14 days. And then the important part here is that the head of the agency or the designee must sign notice. So the legislature has basically said, look, we're going to give you the opportunity to make the right decision on how to do this, but we're also going to give you some time. But we're also going to insist that the head of the agency or someone who's the designee sign so that there's an awareness in the agency that this is going on and that a reasoned, rational decision has been made for a continuance to produce the records. Okay. Now, the contents and form of your request, you're going to indicate to the requester whether, in whole or in part, it seeks copies of disclosable public records which are in your possession. Sometimes we don't have the stuff. You know, we get requests from all over, and a lot of times the healthcare agency gets requests for documents that are in the control of a provider or a doctor or a medical group that we contract with, and we never see that documentation. We never see those treatment records. So as a consequence, we just tell them, hey, we don't have those. And if we don't have them, under the statute, clearly we're not required to disclose them. Now, we also indicate whether we will comply or not with the request. And if not, we have to give the reasons the request will be denied in whole or in part. And claims of exemption are usually made in your letter response. So this is the key that you have to understand. It's not enough for you to say to the requester, we're not going to give it to you because it's exempt. You have to provide the legal rationale. That's usually where we come in, and we have to be able to advise you, okay, there are certain legal rationales or certain legal statutes or provisions in the Public Record Act which will permit you to exempt this or that particular piece of information or a category of information. Okay, now if we are going to produce the records, the estimated time and the date the records will be available. Now this is a very vexing issue because, you know, usually everybody wants it yesterday. We had a request, I think about 2 years ago, for a very, very complex contract issue that we were involved in building a huge software platform in the county. Part of the request, we had like 5 or 6 Public Records Act come in almost instantaneously on this. And of course, you know, I was the one that had to handle them because it all related to our healthcare agency. Well, one of the requests wanted email traffic back and forth on a particular decision-making process, or, well, actually, more than that, with respect to this project. But the point was they wanted all kinds of email. They wanted it back for the inception of the project, which was like about 5 years. So what we had to do was go to the IT people in the healthcare agency, ask them to give us an estimate of time, how they were, first of all, did they have the stuff? Okay, if they did because it was on servers or if it was in a rotational save so that the stuff was stored off-site or wherever, do you have the stuff? Okay, if you do, can you access it? Yes. Okay, how long will it take you to go through and do a search, Mr. IT man, for these type of records that have been requested? In our particular instance, we found that the agency could only take a certain amount of time out of a full-time employee's position, because actually, what do they have to do? They have to run their business, don't they? They have to continue to operate as a healthcare agency or as an assessor's office or whatever. So we're not required by statute to just put 3 people on this full time so we can get it done in a week. We have to make a reasonable effort to obtain the material consistent with the statute. And in this case, we told the requester that we'd have it for them in 3 years. Were they happy? I don't know. I suspect the answer is no. Now, what did we do to kind of make that sweet? Well, there were a lot of other records that they requested also, and we did provide those records in what we call a rolling kind of a production. Okay, here's a category. We'll give you that stuff right now. There's another category here. We'll have that for you in about 3 weeks. So, you know, we indicated to them that we really were making an effort. But with respect to that stuff, no, you can't have it overnight. And I'm sorry, Mr. Reporter, I really don't care. It's not my job to worry about whether you have a deadline to meet or not. You know, the point here is that we're not required to put all kinds of resources on this because remember, this is costing us money. We've got staff time now allocated to go and start to look for these records. We've got IT people working on it. So we're expending a lot of time and energy here, all of which will never be reimbursed to the agency, okay? So as a and it's not like, you know, we can charge for this time. We can charge in the case of computer aggregate, and I'll get to that in a minute. But if it's just a standard record that we've got either in electronic or written form, we have to spend the time and effort to go get it, and we do have the right, and that's what I often remind my client, we have the right to say, guess what? We can't get it for you overnight. We'll do our best, we'll find out what the IT people tell us, and then we're going to give you the estimate of time. And if you, and believe me, I mean, I talked to my supervisor before I told them this in a letter. I mean, we were just going to, you know, have World War III on this matter. Because they could clearly go to court and say, you know, the healthcare agency is being totally outrageous. We find that they've refused us without statutory reason. And so, you know, Mr. Judge, not only do we want you to order a production right now, we want attorney's fees because these people are bad and their attorney is giving them wrong legal advice. So we have to be very, very sure, very, very clear of our facts. But once you, the client, provide that information to us, then we can present the legal argument and explain to them why they're not going to get it yesterday. Now, what we can also do is refuse on a catch-all exemption. And when we do that, we have to indicate the names and the titles of the people in the agency who are making that determination. And I'll get to that in a minute. And then our response should also be in writing. And that's our good record for litigation, okay? We want to be able to have a judge when we're sued, look at our record, look at our letter, and say, okay, this was the legal position of the healthcare agency in refusing to disclose certain documents, and oh, they were very good. They outlined the legal rationale, sometimes multiple rationales for refusal on one disclosure, and provided me with a roadmap to determine whether or not they made the correct legal decision or not. But that's what we want there. We want that out front, so you don't have to worry about it later. Okay. Remember, a response does not have to contain copies of the documents or the offer to make them available within 10 days if not practical. We have that reasonable time after the response to produce the records. So we'll get our letter out the door. We'll say, you're not going to get this category. You're going to get some of this category, and you're going to get all of this, but in 3 years. And we'll tell them, we'll be able to give you the stuff next Tuesday, and then there's another batch, and you'll get that 3 weeks from now, and talk to the custodian, and everything will be good. And so we put that all in writing. Okay, and there's the particular case authority that says we have a reasonable time after the response to produce the records. Now, I can't convince the local reporters that we have any justifiable reason for taking any time other than what's on their schedule to give them the records. Okay, they just don't want to buy into the fact that we have a reasonable time. And they'll always say, well, you know, we can take this over and we can ask our counsel to, you know, sue you guys. And my response is always the same. You know, you have the right under California law to sue us. If you do, we have a clerk of the board. Serve her. It'll get over to us at some point, and we'll look at your lawsuit. Now, in the meantime, if you'd like to continue to discuss with me a reasonable way for us to provide records to you, we'll be happy to do so. And that's just the way we handle it. Because, you know, they want to threaten. They have the right to threaten, but we're not going to respond. We're going to do things the way we should do them. And then, of course, we will always advise the requester how to arrange to inspect or receive copies of the records and the fees that are charged, which are nominal, of course. Okay, now, under electronic records, and I set this all out in the material, but there are special considerations. If the county keeps records electronically, then they must provide the records, but there's a big if. And the request has to be done according to the statute. The requester asks that they be produced that way. It has to be feasible for us to produce them in that way. And the requested format is one that the county uses to produce copies of or store records. So if they ask for a format that we don't use, we can say no on the front end. We can say, sorry, we can give you paper records, but we won't give them electronically because we're not going to go out and buy a system to give them in the format that you want them because that's what your system is. Now, if the requested records are... if the records are requested in paper format, they must be produced in paper format. So even though we might be able to really do a quick, you know, batch run or something, if they want them in writing, we've got to give them to them, even though we might be able to produce a disk and say, look, here's the stuff. Well, they don't want it that way, then the statute says we have to give them to them in paper format. Also, please note that if production of the records requires data compilation, extraction or programming, the county is required to produce the records only if the requester pays the cost of programming and other necessary services. So those have got to be costed out. You've got to be able to be prepared to tell the requester what that information is. And then at that point, we can present the requester a bill and say, hey, it's going to cost X. If you want us to do this, pay us on the front end. Okay. Now, what are public records that are covered by the Act? And this kind of comes into the area of the AG opinion that you've been talking about. The definition of records is very, very broad. They include any writing containing information relating to the conduct of the public's business. Okay, so on and on and on. Very, very, very broad. Okay, next. The definition is made broader by the term writing at this particular section of the Public Records Act. So it's handwriting, typewriting, printing, blah, 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 transmitting by electronic mail or facsimile. So the legislature has made it very, very clear. It's not going to exempt a certain class or category of writing. Everything is fair game. So note there at the bottom, this specifically includes email and data stored electronically. Now, I don't know what legal counsel in your counties may or may not have opined on this, but in our county, we have clearly indicated to the client that email is a public record. And therefore, when a request comes in and there's email that fits the category of the request, we definitely have to have the client look at the email traffic also. Okay. Now, let's quickly look at records that aren't public. Okay, court records are not, and the statute tells us that. Computer software as opposed to data. Okay, we don't have to give up the program, especially if we contract with somebody who has a copyright on it or some such. We don't have to give them that stuff. Okay. Now, again, records that are not public. Okay, personal, purely personal information unrelated to the conduct of the public's business. If we do have records that maybe for some reason I think the one case that I remember is the governor's diary. They made a public records act request for the governor of California's diary 8 or 10 years ago. And there was a lot of stuff in there that was personal, including records of where he was going to be at what time and, you know, what location and when he was leaving the office and doing this. And there was a privacy interest there, one, you know, because it was purely personal. And there was also a public interest in that, you know, you don't necessarily want the bad people to know what route or when the governor's going to be here or there in order to do something bad to the governor. Okay. Now, also, these cases are just there to show us that there is a possibility that records may be unrelated to public business and therefore not public. And also, mere custody doesn't always make what we have a public record. Okay. Now, there's a, I want to just trip back to exemptions real quick to explain to you that although there are a lot of statutes in California that say you can't disclose this or that, how do we get them within the Public Records Act domain so that we can access them and say, no disclosure to you? Well, there's a provision there under sub K which says you can incorporate other bases for exemption found outside the Act. And so there's all kinds of statutes out there in the California codes which provide for non-disclosure or for privacy. And so we can access those through incorporation, including the California Constitution. So if we have an issue over a record and the client says, you know, we really do think this is a privacy issue, among other things, then we will also acknowledge and incorporate Article 1, Section 1 of the California Constitution. Okay, and for example, that does things like, gee, maybe we don't want the witness name out there in the public domain who's going to be the, you know, the star person who's going to testify. We don't want their address out there, and we don't want home addresses of police officers out there. We just made that decision in our county. We're just not going to let that kind of stuff go out the door. It's private. It also puts them at risk, and we believe that case law, as well as some of the arguments with respect to privacy, permit us to make those arguments. Now, are those going to hold up in a court? Well, I don't know. You know, I think so. There's a lot of case law out there that says you can, for example, withhold various identity of information. But each case is determined on its own merits, and so you have to look at the underlying facts of each case to make a determination. In this case, we do our best. If the requester decides to sue us, okay, then now it's in the court of the judge. So, for example, this particular subsection here will allow us to claim exemptions under Evidence Code 1040 when we acquired information in confidence. Now, you guys aren't going to necessarily be involved in this, but it does involve a lot of county agencies, okay? And so what happens is the necessity for preserving the confidentiality of the information outweighs the necessity for disclosure. That's the balancing act. So we have to look at the facts. We have to say, does it fit here? If it does, we're not going to let the stuff go out the door. There's one particular case which regards noise complaints from neighbors, but it was directed about to an airport activity in San Jose. And in that particular instance, what the court said was, you know what, these people complained to a governmental agency. They really wanted the protection of 1040, even though they may not have known it, but they didn't want their identity exposed to the newspaper that was going to make the request, because the newspaper was going to print the name of all the complaining people in the paper. And the agency said, you know what, we just don't think that's a good idea. Those people came to us in confidence. We're glad to know it because, you know, we do have concerns for public health and safety. And one of those issues is noise and what the neighbors might be suffering in a particular neighborhood because of some activity at the airport. And so, therefore, we're not going to let the stuff out the door. And the judge agreed and said, you know what, that's a good use of that particular section. And we agree that there's a privacy interest there. And therefore, we're not going to make the agency disclose the information. Okay, next one. Now, there's the catch-all provision that I talked about, whenever the public interest in non-disclosure outweighs the public interest in disclosure, okay? Now, does that make me a genius when I figure this out for the client? No. It just means that the client makes a discretionary call, and I look at it and I say, you know, that's reasonable. I mean, I think a judge might buy this, but then I also can say to them, but a judge may not buy this. You know, they're the trier of fact. We're going to cite this exemption to the requester, put down the legal rationale, and we always do this. If we're going to make an exemption claim, we're always going to toss in 6255. Why? Not because we like to take up room on paper, but because we've noticed what the judges do and what the appellate courts do. And what do? They look at a category that you said, okay, this is the legal rationale that ABC County made with respect to why they weren't going to disclose. And guess what? The judge goes through and they knock down every legal rationale, and then they come to 6255. But 6255. There's a good balancing test in this particular fact scenario, which leads us to conclude that the agency was correct in not disclosing. Okay? Now, does that happen all the time? No. This is a very difficult exemption to really attach. But on the other hand, we're not going to give up the argument. If you, the client, have made a good faith decision that that stuff shouldn't go out the door, we're going to give you every legal argument that we feel is available to justify that refusal to disclose. Because this is not just arbitrary. You know, we want to be sure that an individual requester understands we've given a correct thought. And if it does go to the judge, Exhibit A is going to be what? Our letter to the requester that outlines the legal rationale for refusal to disclose. And we want to be sure that we have everything up there and all our pins lined up in a row. So you can go to the next one. That's just the statute itself. Okay. Now, under that particular provision, though, the nice thing is that you can withhold records that wouldn't be exempt under any other part of the CPRA. And that's why that's such a valuable exemption. Okay. Now, we just go on to the next one. Okay. Now, here's what you've got to be careful about, though. And this is kind of where the AG opinion comes in. And I know you've talked about it, so I'm only going to say this to you. If you decide as a county that the AG opinion is appropriate and you're going to release that information that's subject to the opinion, that's fine. But remember, if you do that, you will have waived your right to refuse to disclose it to the next person in line. Okay? Once you make the disclosure, all bets are off. Okay? So, when you disclose, remember that this exempt material will go out to a member of the Republic, the public. Okay, and it will require disclosure to anyone else. So you have waived the right to be selected. And I'll tell you where this often comes up. You know, the newspaper guy calls up, makes a request, and we say, oh, we really don't want that information to go out to the paper. It's just not right that this reporter is going to get it because they're going to do, you know, an expose or some kind of a sensational story. You know, we're all cringing over here. And I say to the client, well, wait a minute now. Remember we talked about this last week. They don't have to assign a reason, okay, to get the stuff from you. And they're just like Joe Public, you know. The reporter comes in, makes this request, and then, you know, Joe Public comes in the next day and makes the identical request. Why do we give it to that individual but not to the reporter? The answer is we can't make those kind of distinctions, okay? They don't have to give us a reason. So what we have to do is not examine whether or not it's a good thing or not for the stuff to be disclosed. All we have to do is say, okay, is there a categorical exemption? If not, can we just refuse to disclose because of certain privacy considerations or other considerations? And we have to remember that once we make the determination that it goes out the door, it goes out to everybody else. So if John Q. Public comes in and makes a request on Tuesday and we give it to John, and then the reporter comes in on Thursday, oops, we got to give him the same stuff, okay? So once you give the stuff out that was, for example, subject to the AG's opinion, it's gone. Okay. Now, there is an exception for this with respect to exchange of official information between governmental entities. Okay. So, quick analysis. Is the request for public records clear? If not, we may have to assist. If so, is the request for a public record in the first instance? If it is, okay. We identify all responsive records, even those which may be exempt from disclosure. Usually we want to copy them all. One set becomes the original and may be viewed by the court in the event of litigation. Here's how we do it. This is the original set. We keep it there. When we go to court and the judge says, well, Mr. Counsel, I would like to see the records because I want to look at the material that you redacted, that you crossed out, that you blacked out. Okay, judge, here they are right here. And here's the set we gave to requester. And if the court determines that some of those redactions are inappropriate, then it will order that they not be made, and we give them a new sheet of paper from our original that shows the information that we thought we could disclose, and the court says, no, you can't. Okay. And then we look to see whether there's a statutory mandate on prohibition on disclosure. And let me mention one thing at that point. Recognizing what you have with the AG opinion, I didn't want to get into it too much today. Obviously, some of you know about it. The point here, though, is that, as somebody I think might have pointed out, you're not necessarily bound by the AG's opinion. Okay? You should look to your legal counsel. Your legal counsel will make a determination. Now, will they look at the AG opinion? I hope so. Will they examine the legal rationale that the AG used in saying that this stuff is disclosable? I hope so. Because they may find that argument is persuasive. How persuasive is it to somebody who requests it from the outside and says, I've got a copy of an AG opinion right here, tells me you've got to give me that stuff? Well, you can turn around and say, we respectfully disagree with the legal opinion of the AG. At which point, now that'll be you saying, in consultation with legal counsel, right? You're always going to get cover, okay? So I'll be the one that has to say, maybe there's some wiggle room there. Maybe we can analyze this and, I don't know about those guys up in Sacramento. You know, they work in a dome. So we say, hey, you know, we think there's some wiggle room here. And, so you can do this or that. Okay. Well, in any event, what's going to happen then is we're going to give them our letter. We're going to explain our legal rationale. Then the court is going to come into the picture. The court's going to review and make a decision. If the court publishes its decision, then it becomes California law for the district in which it published, or the county. Most other courts are probably going to look at it when they are faced with the same decision themselves. They may agree or not agree. But in any event, you're not bound by that opinion. And all the courts ultimately say about AG opinions, just like county council opinions for that matter, is they're persuasive, they're nice. But I want you to understand one thing, too. I don't think those people are up there just, twiddling their thumbs. I'm not an apologist for the AG's office, but their opinions are generally well-reasoned. So you have to be very careful if you're faced with this kind of request to be sure to do your homework, look at the material that is being requested, and then consult with your legal counsel before you make a determination as to what you're going to do. Okay, and then finally, again, we have our mandate or discretionary decisions with respect to exemptions. These are some of the mandates that usually we follow because they're set up in the statute for that. Okay. Now, then we go to the permissive exemption. Okay, are we going to exercise our discretion to say no because we feel there's a legal rationale to refuse to disclose? If we do, then we're going to have to go ahead and delete exempt material before disclosing copies. However, if we make the decision to disclose, go ahead. If you don't want to disclose, you invoke the exemption and not do it. And then if there's no exemption, or if there are exemptions, but to protect yourself, you want to incorporate the 6255 analysis too. Okay? So if there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Yes, move back.
Is the making of a request in the Public Records Act in and of itself confidential, or is it a public act?
That's a great question, and our position is that it itself is a public record. And just last week, before I left the office, we got them to come in, and they wanted certain information, but they were a competitor to somebody else, and so they also asked for any other requests that had been made for the same information. And so when the question came up, I told my custodian, hey, it's a public record. There's nothing exempt about that. It's not cloaked in confidentiality. And so go ahead and disclose that also.
Yeah. Is there any consideration as to the currency of the record? We have a request for old records from the 1920s that are in a basement, very difficult to get at or copy. Is that a consideration at all? It's not a current record. It has to do with the current role.
Well, let's look at both sides of the coin. You get a request for records that aren't created, okay? You're going to do them next week in the quarterly report. If they're not created yet and they don't exist, you don't have to disclose because they aren't there. With respect to the records that are old and difficult to obtain or get to, I think the answer, finally, is you have to make a good faith determination to say, can we, though, in fact, go back and look, review, and make a determination? Now, there are times when, and in that case, I think the answer might be, depending on the facts, well, we still have to go ahead and do that, and yes, we have to make those records available once we review them and determine whether there are any there that are responsive to the request. There are times when a request is so burdensome and so far-flung that, yes, in fact, you can refuse, but the manner in which you do it is to do the analysis, look at the facts, consult with your attorney. There's been once or twice when I've had to do it, although the sheriff's deputy in our office, they get usually wild requests for information all over. And oftentimes, they're the ones that will sit there and say, look, this just is just so far-flung, it's just not possible for the agency to continue to function and make a request for, to look and determine whether or not we have responsive records. And I had one case in which the healthcare agency was served a subpoena. Okay, the DA, again, my favorite people, they were involved in an enforcement action against ARCO and some other big gas company in Orange County with respect to the underground tanks, okay? And we get this request come in from a private firm because they represent ARCO. Now, they send a subpoena to us, and, I mean, they wanted everything. They wanted everything from, you know, prior to incorporation as far as that goes. And I looked at the thing and I said, there's no way, if we read this in the right way, they would want almost every record the Environmental Health Agency, part of the agency, has. And that's just crazy. So what we did was, under a particular statute which regulates discovery in litigation, we refused, but we did it in a very nice way. And we said, look, you want everything, you're not going to get everything, we have the right to make an objection under the statute, and we're doing that. And our thought was, if they want to press this in the court, then I'd welcome that. Because now I get a rational, hopefully, judge who says, you know, this is an outrageous and across-the-board request that just can't be complied with without literally destroying the work that the environmental health group has to continue to do on a day-to-day basis. So if this request doesn't get narrowed down, the court will probably be inclined to agree with us and refuse for to be discovered. So those fact circumstances, though, have to be very carefully analyzed, and I don't do that, you know, very often, because this is a very serious business. Because if you make the wrong decision and you are sued and the court makes a determination that those records should have been disclosed, it will provide attorney fees to the complaining side, i.e. the prevailing party, and your agency will now have to pay fees. Yes?
When this discussion came up many years ago, because the law has been allowed, it's just been more in the news recently. Mm-hmm. Our office actually had a discussion, and we did some house cleaning. And the other records we really didn't need, and we got rid of them. In some cases, we had aerial photos from many, many years ago. And many times we had records that we donated to local historical societies. And it saved us having to respond because we don't have a record anymore.
Well, you know, and I think there's nothing wrong with that. If you, for example, if you have a records retention schedule, as we call them in our county, and you destroy records in the due course, you know, after the point at which they are required to be held, and then a request comes in for them, you can properly assign a business reason for having done that, and you're perfectly within your rights. Now, contrast what happened to us a week ago, where we had somebody come into my custodian's office and said, these records are 8 years old, and she was fairly astute. She knew that they could be destroyed. It turns out under California law, we had to hold those records for 7 years, now it's 8 years counting. And so we said, fine, okay, sign the request, put in the order, we'll get those records destroyed, because they had not at that point been destroyed. And that's probably a low priority for all of you. I mean, after all, we don't hire three people to go around looking everywhere to find our records that can be destroyed. We just do that in the business cycle when we can't afford people to go ahead and do it. So later that afternoon comes floating in a subpoena in a family law action for the very same set of records. Okay? So obviously something was afoot. There was a husband and wife involved in a dissolution. Those medical records were wanted by one side. And so at that point we said, oops, all bets are off. We're not going to destroy the records now because there is a subpoena for them. Now, whether or not that subpoena will be properly executed and the court will finally allow those records into evidence or even to be opened from an envelope that the custodian carries, hey, I don't really care about that. But I had to issue a special opinion to the agency and I said, you can't destroy records, even though in any other event you could because they're outside the scope of the statute. The fact is they are now subject to a subpoena. To do so would interfere with legal process and maybe a misdemeanor also. And there's also another statute that says, hey, when you get a subpoena as a custodian, you've got to be the one that marshals the records and marches over to court and provides them. Now, the person that requested the destruction was furious, just furious. And I finally had to say, we're not going to destroy records. We're not going to allow the court to basically hold us in contempt for something like this. I even got a call from a New York attorney who was going to come out and argue the case. And he said, why didn't you destroy those records? And I said, look, although they are eligible for destruction, there's no mandate that we destroy them at any time when we're eligible to destroy them. We only have to do it in the course of our business practice. So we're not going to destroy records and risk our client incurring the wrath of the court because your client wants it done. Sorry, a subpoena, intervene, and bingo. Those are records that otherwise would have been destroyed. They wouldn't have been in our possession, and we could have properly said, you know, we don't have it. So sometimes you get caught, and what I said to the custodian was, why don't you guys revisit your policy about retention and see if you can't start putting some bodies on this and maybe start getting rid of some of those records. Otherwise, you know, we're going to have this problem come up again. Okay. Probably that should be last, I guess.
Is there a chance to get a copy of your PowerPoint? It's a very nice PowerPoint. So.
Okay, this is where I refer to George.
Electrical.
Yeah, George has a copy.
I have a copy. I can email.
Good. Thank you.
Is that allowed?
Oh, yeah, I don't have a copyright on it, and I got permission to come today, so it's fine with me.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.